there's the red button, it looks like it's turning on. I've got a Philips, it looks as though it's recording my voice. Good morning. It is now 10:15 on August 4, 2022. This is the regularly scheduled meeting of the City of Newport Retirement Board of Trustees agenda. There are five members of this board who have been appointed by the City Council. And we do not have at least three of the members available. What I would suggest that we do is at least identify for purposes of our record who is here today. We could then proceed with an abbreviated meeting and especially listen to the investment market review. And then the other issues that are set forth on the agenda, we could perhaps defer those until the October meeting when hopefully we would have a forum. For our purpose of our record, Mr. Heater is not available, Mr. Salins is not available, and Mr. Baker is not available. Mr. Escobar and Mr. Stewart are both here. With that being said, I don't want to even approve last meeting's minutes, but if we could just perhaps go around the table, beginning over here with Mr. Stewart, just identify who is here, and then we can kind of proceed with the abbreviated agenda.
Steve Stewart here.
Okay, Katie here.
Eva Gopal just here.
Jan Kaplan here.
Eric Glover here.
Andrew Haggerty, Columbia Trust.
Steve Maher.
Okay, so with that being said, I don't see any members of the public here, so there's no need for public comment. We do not have an agenda, a quorum. We can't address the approval of the minutes. If we could move on into our quarterly investment market review and liquidity report, that would be helpful.
Sure. Make sure. Does everyone have one of these? The horse trap.
So as I typically do with quarterly meetings, there's an economic overview page. And what this page has is a grid of economic forecasts from, we pull from Bloomberg, with economists around the country who are, they opine on their estimations for various different economic data. And something we keep an eye on, I have some bullet points down here that gives a summary of kind of some of the stuff that we've been seeing and some of the things we expect. What this really is just kind of a summary of stuff that our investment team discusses to kind of guide us in our opinions of where we think the market has been and where it's going to be moving. And so the picture it really paints is, long story short, slowing economic growth, high inflation still lingering. But the trend expectation is that things will be slowing down. So economic growth certainly has been slowing down. You can see the top line here, real GDP year over year, Y over Y percentage. So this is annualized year over year growth for the U.S. economy. Currently clocking in, estimates are at 1.6%. Year end estimates are at 2% year over year growth, which is actually decent growth for the U.S. This is kind of normal, 2% year over year growth for the largest economy in the world. You can see here back in 2021, a gangbusters year at 5.7%. That's a highly unusual rapid economic growth, but that's, of course, coming out of 2020, pandemic-driven recession year. But you can see 2023 expectations are the economy might be even slower, but then getting close to that 2% in 2024. So we're certainly out of the kind of the rapid recovery economic growth we saw last year. And actually, the first two quarters of GDP were negative so far this year, something we haven't seen in quite a while. That doesn't necessarily mean the U.S. economy is in a recession. Recessions typically see a large number of sectors across the economy contract, and there's typically a very unhealthy job market. Those are things we aren't seeing right now. So we don't think necessarily that we're in a recession currently. But certainly we're seeing slower growth here in the U.S. Compared with a year ago. Some of the other figures here, you can see there's two measurements of inflation, CPI, which is Consumer Price Index, and PCE, Personal Consumption Expenditures. Those are both numbers, different measurements of inflation, but historically speaking, very high. We haven't seen some of these numbers since the 80s. You think CPI at 9, PCE, which is the measurement that the Federal Reserve typically looks at. You're looking at annual year-over-year numbers for this year at like 8 or 6%. I think going back to 1982 was the last time we saw some of these numbers. So very high inflation, but the expectation is going into next year and the year after that, slowing down inflation, getting more closer to normalized inflation rates. So a year or two from now, we would expect it to be, you know, between 2 and 3% inflation, and that's quote-unquote healthy inflation for the U.S. economy. And so that's one of the main concerns, not only for investors, but, you know, on Main Street. I know, you know, filling up the gas tank is not something fun to do, going to the grocery store, everything's more expensive. So inflation, even though it's been lingering and persistently high, we think that it should start to improve later in this year and next year. A lot of that has to do with not only the demand side, with more people having more dollars to spend, but fewer goods on the supply side. So not only supply chain issues, getting products to shelves for people to buy them, but you know, there's a whole global aspect there too. Many manufacturing factories in China were shut down because they have a zero COVID policy and kind of lockdown stuff. So there's a lingering kind of effect on the supply chain issue impacting inflation too. You often hear in the headlines about the Federal Reserve and increasing interest rates because one of their mandates is to have stable prices, i.e. not high inflation. So what they're doing is they're increasing short-term interest rates because that's kind of their tool and their tool bag to slow demand. So essentially they're making it more expensive for people to borrow and the philosophy that if they can slow down demand, inflation should slow down with it. But of course, they can only impact kind of that side of the inflation equation. So we think inflation is going to be lingering a little bit longer, but it should be improve, we think, over the next 6 to 12 months, which would be a good thing. I note here three of the main concerns we saw last quarter for investors are still top of mind. High inflation. There's been significant disruptions in energy and commodity markets, primarily from Russian invasion of Ukraine, and then this quote-unquote hawkish or more aggressive stance, the Fed has been increasing interest rates more quickly, and so that has investors concerned. The main concern is there. They don't want the Fed to increase interest rates so much or so quickly that it would drive the economy into a recession. So that's kind of the balancing act the Fed is dealing with at the moment here. Both manufacturing and services side of the economy actually are still in expansionary mode, according to this Institute for Supply Management, the second to last bullet point here. Of note was actually in July number, the services index at 56.7 was higher than June, which was kind of a surprise because expectations were that the economy is actually slowing down quicker than they thought, but that's kind of an indication that maybe it's not. And I think the services index is going to continue to be fairly strong. There's been kind of an imbalance between goods versus services in the economy over the last year or so. One thing to note is this is probably the worst first 6 months of a year in terms of capital markets, stocks and bond investors, for the last 50 years, I think. You know, here, this is the worst 6 months to start the stock market since 1970, and the worst first 6 months of the year for the bond market on record. So it's been, I can probably say, the worst 6 months start of the year I've ever witnessed in my career. In particular, in the bond market. The bond market typically will do okay when the stock market sells off, because history has shown those two asset classes aren't as correlated. So typically when people go quote-unquote risk off and sell their stocks, they flock to bonds because they're the safe asset. But we're in a highly unusual time where there's high inflation and rising interest rates. And so when you have rising interest rates, bond values actually go down because they have an inverse relationship. So it's, I tell my clients, it's kind of an anomaly because typically you would see bonds do fairly well when the stock market sells off. It's just one of those years where it hasn't happened. I would expect the correlation or the relationship between the two to go back closer to normal because history has shown that over long periods of time, bonds do help balance out the risk in the stock market. It's just been an unusual set of events so far this year. Federal rates funds now close to 2.5%. So if you think about in the beginning of the year, we had very low interest rates, but now short-term interest rates are close to 2.5%. Again, that's because the Fed's trying to do what they can to tackle inflation. They're gonna pause, I think, until at least September to see if any more inflation figures come through, seeing any improvement there. But you know, their mandate is to try and get stable prices and you know, stable employment as well. The job market, for the most part, is very healthy. Historically speaking, 3.6% unemployment rate is very low. It's an interesting time where inflation, I think, makes people feel like the economy is worse than it is. But the underlying fundamentals still seem to be okay for the economy. Corporate earnings right now coming through are fairly healthy. A number of companies beating expectations. So it's not all doom and gloom, despite what you pay at the grocery store or the gas station. We think valuations and equities certainly have come down since January. You know, the stock market is down about 20% in the first 6 months of the year. We think as long-term investors, particularly for portfolios like retirement funds, staying invested, particularly at this time, makes sense because valuations are reasonable historically, below at long-term averages. So stay invested, stick with your strategy, don't panic. Inevitably, the U.S. economy does always come back. Companies are resilient.
So. Do you have another one of these for Jack?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Before our meeting began, you and I were having a private discussion, and you suggested at that time that July was a pretty good month for the market. And do you see that as a trend continuing for the rest of the year, or is it an anomaly?
We think, July was a very good month. I think, you know, look at one of the indexes, S&P 500, which is the top 500 companies in the U.S., was up about 9% for the month. Like I said, one of the best Julys ever. I don't think every month is going to be like that. But I think, you know, from now to the end of the year, we think the stock market's going to be up from here. We're pretty confident that inflation at some point is going to improve. It's not going to be a permanent issue. Supply chains should improve at some point. It's not going to be a permanent issue. And we think, you know, the underlying economy is still fairly healthy. If you look at, you know, sometimes when I talk to clients about, you know, what's a real-life example of how the economy is doing, look at people in restaurants. If you see restaurants empty and no one's going out, it's probably a sign that people don't have money to go spend. But if you see, you know, restaurants full, people waiting in line to go places, it's probably a real-time indicator that there's disposable income. And 69-70% of the economy is driven by consumer spending. So if people are still buying goods, people are still buying services and going out, it's still a pretty healthy sign to me that the economy's not in imminent danger of a recession. And our team doesn't think that we currently are, but we do recognize, you know, some of these figures are concerning, particularly high inflation. But in terms of the capital markets, I think the bond market's probably seen the worst of it, the stock market probably too. But that's not to say we're not going to see some ups and downs. You know, there can always be some geopolitical event that spooks people, whether it's, you know, a continuing issue with Russia being in Ukraine. God forbid something happens with China and Taiwan, which I hope doesn't. But anything, one of those things could spook investors. But I think underlying, the market's not overvalued. If anything, it's probably undervalued, the stock market. Bond market's probably seen the worst. I can't guarantee it, but I would be significantly surprised if the bond market lost another 10%, because that's very rare to happen in any given year for the bond market. So, and yields have come back. So I think the bond market's probably bottomed out, certainly from where we saw back in June. But long way of answering, I think between now and the end of the year, we think there's going to be positive returns.
So you really don't have to change too much, or the market doesn't have, our approach to the market doesn't have to change much from when we've been.
Yeah, but we wouldn't recommend that much, because the portfolios are really in a what we call a balanced kind of portfolio. Traditionally, you think 55-60% equities, 40% fixed income. There was a point earlier in the year where we moved some from fixed income or from equity into cash to be a little more conservative. And we subsequently moved it back into equities because we got a little more confident in where we think the markets are going to head.
For purpose of a record, Mr. Baker joined us at 10:26, and that gave us a quorum to proceed. If there are any action items, the quorum would consist of Mr. Escobar, Mr. Stewart, and Mr. Baker. I want to continue with your presentation.
Sure. On page 3, I have a summary of the accounts, and I included not only the end of the quarter, 6/30, but as of the morning of 8/3, just the most recent data I had, and I put the report, just to give you an idea that it's come, the market values have come back a little bit since the end of June. But if you look at the end of June, the top portion there, there's two different accounts for the defined benefit account. The main larger portfolio, which we manage, we call the capital growth. And then there's one that we refer to as the cash or liquidity account, which really just holds a number of months' worth of distributions. So very short-term cash account there. And then the defined contribution portfolio is managed separately from those two, but in a very similar fashion. The next three pages is going to be a report on the capital growth account. This is for the defined benefit portfolio, so pages 4, 5, and 6. On page 4, you can see in the upper right, there's a pie chart here. As I mentioned, it's managed as a balanced portfolio, so it's about 59% equities or stocks, 38% fixed income, a small portion, about 2% is in alternatives, which is a real estate fund, and then a very small portion in cash. In the bottom left, you can see the grid, the performance grid here. For the 3 months, that's for the last 3 months through June 30th. So you can see it was not a good quarter for investors, down 9.95%. Primarily driven by equities or stocks. Stock market had a terrible quarter. In this portfolio, down about 14%. The All Country World Index, which is listed below there, down over 15.5%. So really, all in all, a pretty terrible 3 months for investors. Bond market was down again for that quarter, just like they were the first quarter. So fixed income, down about 4.79, very close to the index, minus 4.69. And then the real estate fund did a little bit better than bonds, but are a little bit better than equities, but a little bit less than the fixed income. So year to date, nothing pretty to write home about here, down 16%, primarily driven by equities. Stock market is down close to 20%. Bond market's down over 10%. As I mentioned, that's a very unusual correlation. You rarely see bond market down that much at the same time that the stock market's down. I'd expect by year end that to be significantly different. just because I, like I mentioned, I think we have seen the bottom in out, particularly the bond market should see some improvement from here. But you know, look over a history of time here, so the 3, 5, 10, and inception to date column, these give you annualized average returns. So on average, what is the portfolio return for a year over those time periods?
Can I ask a question?
Yep.
So the people that are on defined benefit right now, is the investment keeping up with the distribution?
Yes. So the
we made $500,000 in investment. How much are the actual benefactors pulling off the account right now per month?
From the defined benefit distributions.
Yeah, yeah.
So the monthly distribution is about $64,000 per month.
About what, 600, 700,000 a year?
Yeah. And so that's the typically, I think it's 41 retirees who are getting distributions at this point for about 64,000 a month.
And we're making over that, or is there saying as of 8/22 we made $500,000 on our defined benefit?
So you're talking about the difference between the end of the quarter and then to August? Yeah, so we have seen certainly some market fluctuation down through June, but somewhat up since then. Certainly from the end of June to August there. But yeah, the long-term goal is to grow the portfolio and so that it can meet the obligations over time.
So that the beneficiaries live up interest rather than principal, right?
Yeah, certainly the goal is to grow the portfolio so that the distributions can be made without digging into the principal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the long term.
Looks like that's what's still happening today, or is it going to be negative growth there pretty soon?
It depends on how the markets move, but certainly, if you look at the next slide on page 5, this can give you kind of a long-term perspective on the portfolio. In the upper right corner, you see inception to date. This gives you kind of, in this line item, a history of the portfolio, where we started out way back in 2007. The initial funding for the portfolio, about $537,000. Since then, net contributions and withdrawals, so about $4.3 million has been contributed into the portfolio or added to it. But over that time period, you can see there's been income earned as well as market appreciation. And then that gets you to the ending portfolio value. So over the long run, the goal is to not only earn income, but have market appreciation that gets you above and beyond the required obligations of the retirement plan. And so that's the ultimate goal. In the short term, you know, certainly we've seen in the first 6 months of this year, the markets have been down, so you know the portfolio hasn't been improving to meet the obligations for this year. But in years past, it's made above and beyond. So it's kind of like over the long run, the portfolio's goal is to match the obligations for the retirement plan. Certainly.
You have ending portfolio value. Always the same.
What page you on, Jen?
Oh yeah, that's what it is at the end of the quarter, as of 6/30. So for each one of these columns, it looks at it in different like slices of time.
Mm-hmm.
So the quarter to date, it says, okay, in the last 3 months, where do we start and what's happened in the last 6 months, in the last year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, and then inception. So they're kind of like, if you look at a timeline, it's looking at different lengths
mm-hmm.
of the timeline, with the inception to date being the longest kind of viewpoint.
So is that
a question?
Go ahead, Jen.
But the ending portfolio value doesn't change.
No, so this will say,
what is that?
The ending portfolio value, that's kind of a snapshot. It says, okay, as of June 30th, what was the value?
Oh, okay, so that's just being compared.
So, yeah, each one of these columns will say, okay, the last 3 months, where did we start, what happened, where did we end? And so they're all ending at 6/30. That's why that number is the same.
Okay.
But the beginning value is different because it says, okay, what if we went back a year, 3 year, 5 year?
So as of the 6 months, if you look at the 6 months to date, we lost the $1.6 million in our investment, in our portfolio.
Yeah, so if you look at 6 months, started at 9.7, no withdrawals or contributions during that period, small amount of income, but yeah, market appreciation has been minus 1.6.
A lot of money, yeah.
It is, when you start with 9.7. Yeah, as I mentioned, the stock market has been down about 20%, and the overall portfolio, a little bit less than that, 16, but...
And you're
you sound
you're,
like the canary in the mine shaft here. Yeah.
Something ain't right here, brother.
Time will heal it.
Are you saying though, from your projections, you're thinking that that's going to get recovered in the next year, or do you think that's going to take another couple of years to recover that?
My best estimate would be 12 to 18 months, probably.
We'd be back to where we were as of the first of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to predict something like that, but if you think we're down 20% in the stock market, essentially, there's still high inflation, there's still war in Europe, there's supply chain issues. There's a number of headwinds, but, you know, for long-term investors, I think, especially the U.S. economy, U.S. companies are resilient, and I would expect the stock market to recover up to where it was in January, but it might take, like I said, 12 to 18 months from here.
So what are the people living off of if there were no withdrawals out of these accounts? I mean, how's that? How are the beneficiaries getting paid?
We have some distributions that come out of the liquidity account. So we've set aside some money in the other smaller liquidity account. That's where the distributions come out of. From time to time, we will take money from this to fund the distributions. But we've set aside about $500,000 in that other account, just in cash.
And that's just a cash account.
Yeah, and so that's in theory, putting that aside, we know we have this amount to distribute over the next 6 months or so. So we don't put that at risk, and we just dish it out from the cash account.
So if we were drawing out of this account, it would even look worse, right?
If we were drawing out of it during this time period. But, I mean, that's one of the reasons that we manage that way is we say, okay, we need, you know, 6 to 8 months of distributions.
Right,
we'll
yeah.
set aside cash. And during periods like this, it's nice that we don't have to sell out when the market's been down because we've already set aside some cash. You know, it's better to raise some cash when the markets have recovered.
That other money's not earning any interest or anything.
A small amount of interest because it's sitting in cash.
I think, Dietmar, if you look at page 3 of Mr. Haggerty's folio here, you'll see
$500.
Yeah, you'll see those other accounts, the liquidity accounts.
That's a 505 and 547.
Yeah, I think those liquidity accounts are where they're drawing out the benefits.
Okay. Yeah, that's the account that the that does the distributions. And
I kind of feeling that we don't hit the goal, and I think the goal is for state and we just hit. Then you already have some contingency things that could be done, maybe to either speed up or at least be a little bit more entrenched and secure as we go ahead, because we want to hit the goal, not just be working at it. And so I assume that there are strategies that are involved there that you're thinking of, I'm hearing some. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we've set aside, you know, that $500,000 in anticipation of the distributions that we need. And then, you know, my expectation is that we'll draw that down and hopefully the market will recover, and then we would raise an additional amount of cash for you know, the 6 months after that.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. That's kind of the strategy that we're working on. I'm going to page 6. So, again, this is still the capital growth account. Just to give you an idea of some of the underlying strategies, the top 10 performers in the upper right-hand corner, as we've been saying most of the year, cash has been king. So the top line item there, one of the only positive asset classes that you get a return on so far this year has been cash. And then below that, we have some other strategies, some short-term bonds. Value-oriented stocks have held up relatively better than growth stocks. As you may recall, growth or tech-oriented stocks have done very well prior to this year. Over the last 5 to 10 years, they've been very positive returns in the portfolio. So growth stocks have sold off this year, and value has outperformed. We have overweighted our U.S. exposure versus international. You see the pie chart there, the red piece of the pie being much larger than the yellow. And we're going to continue to do that. We think that the U.S. is in a better position economically, certainly with some of the risks we're seeing in Europe going on right now, some headwinds in China. So we have been overweighting U.S., but we do have international exposure because you know, history has shown that having international exposure is better for diversification and long-term performance. So that's the three-page report for the capital growth account. I got one page here for the kind of the cash liquidity account. Nothing exciting here because it's just sitting in cash. And you know, it earns, it has been earning very low interest, but this cash strategy that we have now just increased to 2.15%. So as you mentioned, is it earning anything? It's gonna start earning a little bit because rates have been going up. So cash is gonna start earning a little bit above 2%, at least for the near-term future.
Because of the interest rate rise?
Yeah, the cash strategy we use here, it's called R&T, it's a firm called Rich and Tang. They partner with, you know, over 100 different banks and try and get the best interest rate. And they just increased it on Monday to 2.15%. So haven't seen cash earn much in about a decade, but we're starting to see it improve a little bit. Page 8 is the same three-page report, but this is for the defined contribution account. Very similar. We manage it hand-in-hand with the capital growth account. So again, balanced portfolio. You often hear the term 60-40. That's kind of how we try and manage it, at close to 60% equity. So we're at 58.5, 37-38% in bonds. And you can see here the returns will look very similar to the other account. So year to date, down close to 16%, primarily driven by equities. Stocks have been down close to 20%, bonds down over 10%. The real estate fund has done better than stocks, but still is a negative. It's just overall been a tough year for investors so far. Almost every single asset class besides cash has been negative.
Employees have lost, what, about 2.2 million of their money?
What's that?
The employees have lost about 2.2 million of their money, right, this first two quarters.
If you look at the combined change in value, you know, negative. So far, year to date, this one's down 676. I mean, it's been, there's no rosy painting on it. It's been a terrible 6 months for investors. Yeah. Page 9 gives you the same kind of growth of a dollar chart.
Let me ask you another question.
Sure.
Does this loss have any effect on what the employees will get when they retire? I mean, is that adjusted, or is there a contribution or their retirement benefits going to be the same under defined contribution? I mean, it's different, right? But defined benefits, it stays the same.
Yeah, as far as I understand it, the defined benefit would be a certain amount that the city's obligated to give them. And defined contribution is a little bit different because that's what is defined when you contribute. But the defined benefit is more similar to like a pension fund, if you will, I believe. So, as I understand it, the city's obligated to pay a certain amount. The question is, over time, does the city portfolio, is it fully funded to meet all of its obligations over time? I think the last time an actuarial study was done, it was fairly close to fully funded.
It was roughly 85%.
Yeah, I mean, it was in a fairly healthy position, if I recall the last time it was done. Page 10 is kind of that little closer look, but very similar. Top 10 performers will look identical. Again, you can see the overweight to U.S. exposure versus international that we're going to continue to do going forward. But all in all, no big recommendations for changes in the portfolios. We think as a long-term portfolio for retirees, a balanced portfolio still makes sense. As I mentioned, we expect the correlation between bonds and stocks to normalize. And we are pretty optimistic about equity markets moving forward. I think the bond market's bottomed out. So, for investors that are invested, I would say hang tight. It's part of the roller coaster ride you're going to see over long periods of time. If you have cash to put to work, I'd recommend investing. But I certainly wouldn't advise clients to get out of the market at this point, just because I think we've been through most of the worst of it so far this year.
Are there any questions of Mr. Haggerty from any of the members of the committee?
Your recommendation, if the city had cash, they could reinvest that into put it in the market? I mean, is that what you're saying?
I for clients that I have that have cash, I'm putting it to work now, because I mean, companies are 20% cheaper than they were in January.
Putting it in the market or in stocks or what are you putting it
in? In a balanced strategy. Most of my clients are in a balanced portfolio, but I have other ones that are more aggressive. I think, if you look for a long-term standpoint, the price to earnings ratio, which is something people look at for valuations in the stock market, is close to its historical average, if not a little bit below. So for long-term investors, I would say now's not a bad time to invest.
Yeah, do you counsel differently for age? I mean, if a person is 30 versus 80?
Certainly. I mean, there's different risk appetites, there's different time horizons. And so I have clients from trust funds for young children and all the way to retirees who just want income. So we have a wide variety of clients and different portfolios that we manage. But three things that I look at is, what is your appetite for risk? How comfortable are you with the ups and downs of the market? What is your time horizon? So how long do you have to invest? And then what kind of distributions do you need over time? And so those three things kind of dictate where a client might be and how aggressive their portfolio is. Certainly, if you need more money and you have a shorter time horizon, be more conservative. If you have a long time horizon, don't need distributions, be aggressive. That's kind of a simple way of looking at it.
Okay. Anyone else have questions for Mr. Haggerty? Now that Mr. Baker is here, we could perhaps take a look at the minutes from April 28th, and if either Mr. Stewart or Mr. Baker could make a motion whether or not to approve the minutes from April 28th, that would be helpful.
Make a move to approve the minutes as presented.
You gotta say second, John.
Well, I was gonna call for the question. we vote, and I move in approval of our presentation.
Can the record reflect that Mr. Baker is seconding Mr. Stewart's motion? And we'll call for the question. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. If anyone's opposed, very good. Now, the next item on the agenda was a discussion of a safety step in place for employees' retirement fund. Is that an item you wanted to discuss, Kay?
No, I believe Mr. Baker wanted to discuss that.
Oh, okay.
I'm not hearing well, and I need help there.
You had asked to be put on the agenda to discuss safety steps in place for employees' retirement funds. So you want to discuss that now?
Yes. You can move into the business without my saying anything, can't you?
Well, what did you, what was your plan, or what did you have in mind in that regard, Mr. Baker?
I just have in mind that we hit the agenda items and we discuss them if we need to, and some of them might say yes, some of them might say no. I'd also like to tail end this to say a little bit that I have suffered some mental setbacks. Kay did a wonderful job of giving me the time of day and all that. I was kind of shepherding a house project at my house. I was under the impression all day and all this week that I was a day ahead of what I am ahead of now or behind now. And so I'm just lucky that I can be here and I know what day it is today. So I just wanted you to know that. After 50 years, I've never been late for one of these meetings.
Just as the facilitator, should we push so we have more of our members here next week, next month, October? We could shift this over and then let all of them know we want to bring their discussion items so we can discuss it?
It's pretty unusual that Mr. Heater isn't here. Mr. Salins usually makes it about half of our meetings. Perhaps if we could do some outreach,
yes,
and encourage them to be here for the October meeting, we could put this matter back on the agenda.
Yes.
I think that's a pretty important topic based on
I am improving.
$2.3 million loss that we had this quarter.
Well,
you know, what kind of safety measures?
That's a snapshot for 2022. But Mr. Haggerty, what was the gain for 2021?
I could bring those numbers, but I mean, we've over the last 3 to 4 years, we've seen some pretty decent growth.
Yeah, that was 15, pretty significant growth. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hate to see all that slip away.
Yeah, I mean, that's our goal is not to lose money. It's to gain money. Our goal is to hand in hand with you.
So, but may I insert, the next meeting is at 9:30 in October because we have the employee meeting. Now we should move so we can have time for discussion before we jump in. Should we have that meeting at 9 o'clock to go to 10:30 so we can bring up some points with Mr. Haggerty?
There was another issue that I thought we were going to discuss today, and that was to have either someone from Human Resources or Mr. Noble educate our committee on, you know, where I think we have a grip on the defined benefit and the defined contribution. But how does it work when the employee has a participation in both plans? And that was, I think, a question that came up last time. So if we could perhaps put that on the agenda, that might be helpful.
Okay.
And is it uncomfortable for you to reach out to either Mr. Noble or his designee?
Not at all.
Okay.
I don't
want to put you in an awkward place, Kay.
No, I'm never in an awkward place when it comes to talking. And unfortunately, HR is on vacation. So we sort of fell into a void here where we don't have...
It's summer and frequently folks want to take a little time off.
Yes, and they deserve it.
That's to be expected.
Okay. So we're going, may I just repeat this? We're going to take this safety steps and also HR giving us a little report to two different agenda items, correct?
Two different separate agenda items. Mm-hmm. I still think if we began at 9:30, we could still get to the employee meetings at 10:30.
I'm just stating because we may want to go over maybe the market.
All right. 9 o'clock then?
That would be
what's the consensus?
Better to have some time between the meetings than to run over.
That way we don't have to rush, Mr. Haggerty.
Right.
Okay, so
yes.
If there's a consensus of the group, The October meeting will begin at 9 o'clock, so they have an hour and a half before the employee meetings.
And you have plenty of time for coffee and cookies.
What time, what day is that?
So I have a set for, it's always Thursday, October 27th.
October 27th.
Are there any retirements pending?
Well, okay.
HR's not here.
The HR wasn't here, but Steve and I happened to have a meeting with Barb, and we did ask that question, and at this time, not.
Okay, so that can be noted in our minutes also.
My little setback involved hearing too, and it's getting better. I'm seeing physicians and medical people on my issue, but I just wanted you to know that there's no priority that took precedence over this meeting for me. And I'd be happy to be involved, but it depends on my conditioning, and so I will make sure that I have an appointment with the two medical staff I'm working with, and I'll let you know if I feel that and I'll be very realistic whether I can contribute positively or not.
That's a difficult process that you're going through, and we have always appreciated over the decades your contribution to the city and the community at large, John.
So.
Okay, so we've discussed having an agenda for next meeting. Mm-hmm. We've discussed meeting at 9 o'clock in our October meeting. We're going to have the employee meetings.
Yes, sir.
Now, who will participate? Traditionally, I've been there, and who from the city is there? Will that be you this year?
Yeah, I'll probably be there.
All right. Anyone else?
How about I'll probably be there.
All right. And
I sat in on both of them last year. I wasn't at this position last year, but.
But and generally,
I will be there.
Generally, we only need two. We need to have Steve. We need to have Braulio, and then Andrew.
I am available. You said the 27th.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just putting it in my calendar.
Okay, here. I want to make sure you can be there because generally we have you or Gillian there. Right?
Yeah, I can stay for the.
Thank you. Meeting. I appreciate it. So we.
In the past, there's kind of a, you know, it's not well attended. You know,
right.
At best there's four or five folks, and it's not individual discussions about that person's particular plan. Just an overall general discussion.
That's correct. Now, the employees do have the option then, starting at 1 o'clock.
Right, at 1 o'clock, to have
to
private
schedule
meeting.
Private meetings. And that's, I don't believe, do you stay for that, Andrew?
No, typically they did that with Mike.
Exactly, so.
Yeah, because they had particular questions
that would
about
just be
the
with
plan
Steve
or their situation. And Mike was pretty well-versed in
and
how
we
the plans
could have
worked.
Perhaps HR be there too.
And do you have a plan to put the word out to
yes, HR will do that. Mm-hmm. We'll request her to put it out to all the employees to call me and to schedule for their little personal 15-minute. Mm-hmm.
So meeting. under the defined contributions, the employee have the ability to direct you to do different than other employees?
We don't manage the portfolio
per person.
Yeah, person to person. It's a pooled.
The pool.
Yeah, it's a pooled. And then the city keeps track of the details behind the employees' balance, if you will, or their percentage that they're owed. And so, yeah, it's a pooled fund that we manage in that balanced allocation. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Do you take into account the employees' wishes as a group?
We don't take direction from employees on managing the portfolio, but I would say that I believe there is another retirement program that they have the ability to contribute to and manage.
Or they want to manage themselves.
We have a deferred comp, Dietmar. We have a 457 that we can change our allocations to our own.
So you can take it out of the pool if you wanted to.
It's a totally separate account. It's a 457. So it's basically like a 401k that's the employees.
Was it Nationwide or?
Yeah,
okay.
By Nationwide.
Yeah, so I thought.
But also defined benefit, like myself, when I choose to retire, they will tell me what I have, but I can pull all of that and move it over. I don't have to.
As retirement, right?
At retirement.
But as your, as an employer right now, you can't dictate to Andrew where your, where your investments are.
I wouldn't think to do that. I don't know enough about it.
Well, that's the nationwide plans.
Right.
The 457, as you mentioned. This is the money that the city has set aside for employees.
7%.
But the money that employees set aside for their own retirement plan, they can dictate however they want to.
So on top of the, and on top of this, the investment they have through your company, they also have their own personal.
If they've chosen to set it aside, which I think most probably do.
Yeah, if they chose to put money into it, so.
Like a 401K, it's an option for.
Option.
For clients. But as I mentioned at these employee meetings every year, I think it, I don't know if they call it 6+3 or something like that.
Yeah, 6+3.
Yeah, so it's, if an employee sets aside up to 6% in their own nationwide 457 plan, the city will contribute an additional 3% for them into the defined contribution. And so it's like an extra.
So how did it work with you, Eric, when you transferred your money from your previous position here? Did all that go into this pool?
No, my previous position was covered by PERS, which is a totally separate retirement deal.
Okay.
And
now you're in defined contribution, right?
Correct. Yeah, I'm in the 6+3, which means that the city will put 6% in this right here. And after 7 years, you're fully vested. And then the city also matches, I think it's 3% in the 457 if a staff person elects to put that money in there.
And the PERS just keeps that, that investment just there, right? It doesn't.
Correct. Yeah, PERS, your money stays there with their retirement system.
The city isn't involved in that at all, right?
Well, you are for law enforcement, but not for.
No, I mean, for your account.
No.
Correct. It's just for me. Yep.
That brings up a question. So when you're talking about the 457, which I'm in the 457, I have been for years. City pays 3% in?
They do a match.
Yeah, they do a match.
So what if, what you put in, if you put in 3% or whatever, they'll fully match you up to that amount.
No, that was ever being done. Okay. I'm going to have to do some research.
It's free money, Mr. Stewart.
Well, I know it is,
invest,
but everybody's
putting
that 3% in there. Well, I know that because, I mean.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that more employees don't take advantage of that. Because
I don't think we're all aware of it. Because I started out doing like $100 because that's all I could afford. I couldn't have, but now that there's 3%, this is new to me.
That when we have our employee meetings, we can raise that
issue. I've been here 30 years.
You can put 10,000 in and the city would match it.
Yeah. Now, I believe that the question that's being, that has arose is because the employee, it is put out there in every meeting. If you're, okay. It is put out there, but I, for some reason, it's not verbalized in such a way that the employee understands.
I would agree.
Okay, so
all right,
words,
so we'll make it a point,
yes,
at our October meeting that those folks who attend, mm-hmm, I'll take it upon myself to raise that to both groups.
And sometimes verbal is nice. Visual is the best.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had, you know, a little poster board and you said, okay, if you want to contribute your full 3%, okay, to the 457, hey, here comes the city. You're putting 3% in and they're putting 3%, up to 3%. And if you had it visual so they would understand, when you verbally, people will miss anything, you know.
Is that 3% of gross or net?
But it's up to 3%
of what? Yes, 3% of your gross, your base.
3% of your salary before taxes.
I've lost a lot of money not being invested.
Yeah.
Crap.
But anyway, so I'm just saying that because if you say, hey, there's cookies and milk, all they hear is cookies. They forgot about the milk, right? And so you have to show, okay, go over and get two cookies and a glass of milk, visual. So truly, people do, and it's just a common thing that we do. We hear what we want to hear, but you know, or what seems the most important. So I think anything you could do to visualize that or to hand out something to them, so they have it right there.
And I think the 6+3 and the contribution has been promoted more than the 457, 3+3.
So the 6+3 is included?
That's for new employees only.
Yeah, I think it started in like 2012. So right. Any new right. employees don't have access to the defined benefit side.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
I think historic right. employees.
But that's why I'm saying I think the 6+3 is promoted a lot more because we have a lot of new employees. The 457, you put three, city puts three, and I don't think that's been promoted very much.
And that's with Nationwide.
That's yeah. with Nationwide.
So it has not
that's
been.
That's my understanding with the employees under the defined benefit plan, they can't participate in that particular. I don't think they can participate in
that. Would,
you can't get the 6.3. I can't get the 6.3. But
well, you're getting the 6%, but the additional, say if you did another 3%, if you're under the defined
well, that's Nationwide.
Plan.
See, the,
yeah, Nationwide.
So we got Nationwide and we got our retirement. Yeah, there's two separate things.
Yeah, two separate
yeah.
things.
So, yeah, so Nationwide, I could put 3% in and city would do 3%. Is yeah, that correct?
So
and that doesn't matter what level of retirement.
Are you under the defined benefit plan?
Yes.
Yep, I am.
Okay, yeah, so I think that's why you're not participating. That's only available for defined contribution.
Even in the four, even with the 457?
I could be wrong.
Yeah,
but
you
I
might
want to
look into that because I think after a certain year, the cutoff was, okay, these people are part of defined benefit, but moving forward, everyone's going to be part of defined contribution.
Right.
So yeah. I think in his case, he very well could be part of the 6+3. So
so you might be in both.
I've been here since 1989.
How do
I'm
we
not
get
part of the, I'm in the defined only.
How do we get
and I have that other money that was one we have two accounts in the defined benefit.
How do
we
get
we have the money that's frozen.
Yeah, it may be worth looking into because if you've been here that long, when you go to retire, you might have a piece of both defined benefit and defined contribution.
Yeah.
As I understand it.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
how I
that's
understand
why we have the two.
Yeah. So right now you're.
But the 457 is what I was returning when this 457 came up, but I can put three and the city will match three. Does
yeah.
that matter which plan you're in
yeah,
here?
I think you have to be in the defined contribution plan for that piece
okay.
of the puzzle. That's probably why you're. It wasn't an option for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be something that needs
come
to be
to the 1 o'clock meeting, and they
right,
can have
that's
a private
something
discussion.
That needs to be made very clear, and I think that's part of why we wanted to have Barb or Spencer here to talk about this to get clarification. Yeah, I think that was part of our last minutes, like Brawley was talking about.
Yeah,
we wanted to have him here so we can get an understanding.
Because, as I understood it, I thought
you need visuals.
Yeah, yeah.
6+3.
I thought they could
like,
do the
6+3.
Yeah, they are part
yeah.
of both in terms
of
the
6%. You know, Mr.
Kaplan,
maybe
when
we
could
have
the
HR folks make
a
flyer for each group
yeah.
and we could distribute
that,
at the time that you're talking about in this meeting. We're inviting
so
people to come to the meeting and then reinforce it when we have the meetings beginning at 10:30
in October.
There's a lot of confusion on the employees
yeah.
part.
So
of it, but they
basically
can't
my
can't
whole thing is like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm hearing it. I'm hearing the confusion both from Mr. Stewart
the
and sometimes a little different response from Mr. Haggerty and our city finance fellow.
Okay. And the vesting
that's why it'd be nice to
DC is like 7 years for
all of us to fully understand the rule.
And it has to be more than verbal.
Yeah.
It has to be more than verbal because people will sit and listen. Once they leave, they have not retained what they've heard.
Right.
They said that cookie was pretty
they
good.
They need to take, we need to, yeah, the cookie.
Kay's
yeah.
a great baker.
Put their mind on the cookie.
But we need to, but if they have something, they can look at it, and then they can always come back with the question.
Could the HR staff put together a flyer for both the defined contribution and the defined benefit folks on this?
And 457.
I think that's why you've never heard about the 457. Cause
well, I pay into
the
457.
You probably only went to the defined benefit.
Right, but I pay into the 457 because any employee can.
Yeah, they can.
Oh, additional. Yeah,
yeah.
You can put in additional money. Just
yeah, so I
just
put my own money in there, but I had never ever heard that the city would do another 3%.
So they probably won't for you because
yeah,
you get a pension, whereas I don't get a pension.
Yeah.
So that's why
yeah,
they.
That's why it's only that. The
3%. Right, but see, that's where we need that clarification.
Yeah, that
yes.
needs to be clarified.
I mean, there's not a lot of us defined benefits still here.
Yeah.
It's going to be all defined contribution.
Also,
yeah. Yeah.
I know down here.
Kay and I are.
Yes, so you can contribute to the 457.
Which I do, yeah.
But there's just not the 3% match because you're also in the defined benefit plan, so.
But perhaps what we'll do is we'll ask HR, Steve and I.
Just to confirm it, yeah.
To please have a visual flyer for both types. Okay, the defined benefit plus the 457, and then just a defined contribution. And, okay?
All of us on board with that?
Yeah.
Anything else that we need to discuss today here on the 4th day of August? Hearing nothing further, the meeting is adjourned, and I'll see folks back here in October.
Maybe passing on the street?
I apologize, but I am getting better. I know it's hard to tell, but.
Well, we're just happy you're here, John.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Here's your device.
And I think that they also were recording the other one too.
Good, so.